Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Angie Nisbet, and it's my pleasure to bring you season six of Married to the Land, a podcast sharing stories of our everyday rural women, their journey from the beginning and how their path has let them become married to the land. I'm thrilled to introduce our guest for today's episode, Emma Pentagast. In her early years, Emma explored various jobs before discovering her true passion for agriculture. However, her journey took an unexpected turn during her teenage years. Fast forward to the present day, Emma, along with her husband, manages an organic beef property with her two young children. And we're going to talk about the transition from the normal everyday beef farming to organic beef. Emma will talk us through how she manages life on the land, how she navigates the challenges of her daily life, and also managing mental health. There's also sections in today's chat about eating disorders. One I think we all can take something from. So let's get into today's episode. How are you going? Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's exciting.
It is very exciting. And firstly, we're going to get all the formalities out of the way. So can you introduce yourself, where you live and who makes up your family?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Emma Pendergast and we live just outside of Gundawindi, about 35 km on a property. My husband, Brody, and our two little children, Clancy and Ruby.
Beautiful part of the world where you are, that's for sure. Have you had a good season?
We have, and we had another 32 mils last night in a storm, so it's looking pretty good here. Not as much rain as some of the properties around us and west to us, but yeah, it still looks amazing.
That's perfect. Great start to the year for you both. I want to get started with the question, where have you been and where are you now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I grew up in a small town called Scone in the Hunter Valley of New South Wales. So yeah, I was born and bred down there. And when I finished school, my parents bought a property in Tamworth, just a small property. So we moved up there and I did a bit of moving around, I guess, as you do when you're younger. And then I met Brody and we lived in Walca, so just sort of between Tamworth and Armidale for almost 5 years. And then I guess the cold got the better of us. It's pretty chilly in Walca. And yeah, it was time to sort of move on and broaden our horizons. So yeah, this amazing opportunity came here in Gundawindi, grabbed it with both hands, and we've been here since August 2023. So still quite new here, but yeah, we love it.
And do you guys own that place where you are now?
No. So we work for a beautiful family called the Brook family, and they own quite a lot of country out at Birdsville and quite a few places out there. And this is just one of their smaller blocks that they have as, I guess, a bit of a backup block. So we manage it, Brody and I, just here by ourselves.
Some great opportunity there to learn, obviously, for you both. Mm. A significant aspect of your journey, Emma, which is often overlooked in discussions, is the experience of eating disorders. And you yourself went through that with anorexia during your teen years. Could you share how that struggle began, the mental challenges you faced during the darkest points for you? And I suppose, how did you work your way through it and regain that health to being okay again? Because I think as you're a mother of a girl and I've got two girls myself, so I'd just like to go into that with a bit more depth. And, you know, I don't think it's a topic that we probably speak enough about. A lot of people still go through it. And yeah, I suppose I just want to know how your story unfolded there.
It's really funny because I talk about it quite openly, you know, with anybody. And I couldn't tell you why it initially unfolded or why I went down that path. I guess I've always struggled with feeling like you need to fit in and being accepted. I guess all those things that most people probably would. And, you know, anxiety and all those kind of things. And so I was, I don't know, maybe around that sort of 13, 14 mark when girls change and I guess your school friends change. And I was very, very thin. And it's really funny, I've kind of blocked that little section out of my life, but I don't recall ever having any like therapy type sessions with any psychologists or things. But my hair fell out. It was very thin. I had this beautiful curly long hair, wavy, I guess I should say, long hair. And still to this day, it's extremely thin. And yeah, I was probably only about 37 or 38 kilos. I was quite tiny. And then I got better from it, but then probably lapsed back into that kind of mentality in 2018. I was with Brody and we were engaged and things. And yeah, I lapsed back into, I was 45 kilos the day we got married. I was tiny. And again, probably falling into that feeling accepted. And, I didn't have a period for like 18 months. So, it scared me once we got married and thought about having children. Would we be able to have children? Especially having that kind of eating disorder twice in my life, and would my reproductive system be affected from it? So I guess it was a real sort of kick into gear once we got married, and I was like, well, I need to get healthy again. I barely ate, I kind of lived on a bag of lollies and yeah, it was terrible. And I exercised all the time and I was just obsessed with it. So I recovered from it again and I've recovered really well from it and I'm very mindful of it now. And it took me about probably close to 12 months to gain enough weight to get my period back. And we were very fortunate and I fell pregnant very easily with both our children. But since having our children, I haven't gone back to an itty bitty person because I know now that I'm very obsessive about it. So I'm very conscious of enjoying life, enjoying my babies, and I don't want to obsess about food or exercise or things. So, I'm a healthy size 10 and I'm happy with that. I guess as you get older and a bit more mature and realize that life's short and I want to enjoy a piece of cake with my girlfriends or a coffee or I want to have a glass of wine and I don't want to obsess over that stuff anymore. And I guess, I've always had an amazing husband that is would love me no matter what size I was. I'm very fortunate there. And I often say, oh gosh, those jeans don't fit anymore. And Brode will say, who cares? Just go and buy some new ones. Like he couldn't care less and is just the most beautiful person. So I'm very fortunate there that I don't need to obsess about it as much. But I didn't have any professional treatment with it per se. I listened to a lot of podcasts when I was recovering and a lot of past people that had had eating disorders and how they overcame them and things. So that was really helpful. So I think that's why I love podcasts because, I still get anxiety, not over eating disorders, but I'm just that kind of person. So, I often listen to podcasts and resonate. I listen to yours quite regularly with other rural women that have different stories about how they've overcome things, which I find really helpful. Yeah.
So, and when you talk about, I suppose, the anxiety or the stress of sort of when you're falling back into it, do you get those flutters a little bit sometimes? Maybe not around food, but in other situations. And can you recognize that now? And what do you do for yourself? What are some tools for yourself that you try and draw on to, I suppose, work through those emotions?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. Definitely still get anxiety about things and stressed about things. And Brody, my husband, couldn't be further from an anxious person at all. I mean, he's so casual and he couldn't give a stuff whether someone liked him or not, but everybody loves him because he's a lovable person. And I guess, when I start to have different thoughts about different things, he is my best friend in the world. So, I talk to him about everything. And if I'm having a bad day about something, I talk to him. Sometimes he doesn't understand why. He's like, why do you say that? Why do you think like that? And I think I frustrate him some days because he's like, oh my God, really? And so he, yeah, certainly helps me a lot with things. I also have another beautiful mentor and friend who I photograph with a lot, Joe Thiem, who has daughters of her own, and one of them in particular goes through some different mental health things. And Jo's just sort of, I call her Granny Jo, and she's a bit of a rock to me as well. And pick up the phone to her sometimes, and we'll talk for hours. And yeah, she's a really beautiful person and helps me through a lot of things. But yeah, I guess just being really aware of your thoughts and why. And same old story. I mean, I think social media is a huge killer in thinking that everyone else has got their shit together when they really don't. People show the best parts of their day, not the worst parts. So I don't share a lot of stuff on social media. I share a little bit, but I certainly don't share a lot because I try and keep our life reasonably private, I think. I love my own time. I love to be at home and I love to be in the garden or riding a horse or just being here with us. So I don't crave people, if that makes sense. You know, I love to go to town. I love to catch up with friends, but I don't need people. So I'm very happy with my own time and my own thoughts. And I think that helps a little bit as well because I just don't feel like I have that need for, people, I guess. I honestly believe, just maturing and, you think at 21 or 25 even that you're so mature, but yeah, I guess just life experiences show you otherwise.
Yeah. And you're a mum and you've got a daughter yourself, Emma. So now being on the other side of that, what would you sort of like to instill as your little ones grow up about, I suppose, body image and that whole acceptance? Have you started having those conversations with your daughter? Is there, that positive reinforcement? How has that looked like for you being a mum?
Well, Ruby's only 20 months, so she's still a little squirt. Clancy is 3.5, and we know that we already have these very tenacious little firecracker children. They're quite bold. So I guess just instilling confidence in them, and I would never like to dampen their little fires. Clancy in particular is very determined and very bold, which we adore. Brody always says, me and you put together, of course, he doesn't really have many options. And Rube is just this beautiful little soul. So I guess trying to instill that, it doesn't matter whether you're a size 8 or a 16 or bigger or whatever you are. I mean, it doesn't make you a good person. And so just being you and being true to yourself, and it doesn't matter what size or shape or whatever you are, just be you and people will love you for you. And I think that's the biggest thing as well. I think now with maturity that I am happy to be me and people will either like you or loathe you, and I'm not going to change to fit into a box. Gosh, I went through the stages of having bleached blonde hair and hair extensions and all these things to, feel like you fitted in, and now I couldn't care less. And I don't, I was only having dinner with a girlfriend the other night. She's like, I remember when I met you and you had so much makeup on and you had this and that and rah rah. We were chatting and I was like, gosh, now. I was sitting there having dinner and my hair was a mess and I didn't have makeup on and I really don't care. I still love to present myself nicely, but gosh, I'll go weeks at home if I'm not going anywhere and yeah, won't touch my makeup bag and couldn't care less. So I guess that is also something I want to instill in our children that, it's nice to get dressed up and it's nice to present yourself well, but yeah, just stay true to yourself and who you are.
Yeah, great message. Sometimes it's a bit foreign to go back to the makeup bag when
I
you haven't worn it for a
know.
while, isn't
It's
it? You're like,
awful.
where do I start?
And yeah, I did the other day and my poor skin was like, oh, gross, yeah.
Stick with us. We'll be back after the break. ICPA is an educational voice for rural and remote families and their students. They are committed to ensuring equitable access to education, opportunities and support for every step of a student's learning journey, from early childhood through to tertiary, trade or training. Membership is for all families and interested parties, whether they live in a rural or remote town, on a property, are itinerant workers or simply have a connection to rural and remote education issues, which the ICPA advocate for. If you want your voice for your children, join a branch near you. With 45 branches, you're sure to be able to reach out and connect. Membership is easy to get. Head to www.icpa.com.au to join today. Yeah, it's so weird. I know exactly what that feeling's like for sure. So let's get into some other aspects of your life, because I know you're a very talented person and it's how you got there, which is the most amazing story. But you transitioned out of school, you've had a few jobs, you did a bit of a marketing role with the ABC and then went on to do a few roles within Camp Draft Central. Is that correct? So talk us through what your interest was around, I suppose, those jobs, because they are still very agricultural based, because it has such a huge farming and agricultural customer base. So what drew you to those jobs, and what was some of your highlights for working with those organisations?
Yeah, so I've always ridden horses my whole life, and I guess I got headhunted to go to the ABCRA and work as the PA for the then general manager, which I loved, and I still, I think, like that PA role in my everyday life. But yeah, so I went and did that, and I was there for, I don't know, about 4 years. And yeah, I loved it. I sort of gravitated from the PA job into the marketing role when different people had left, and you'd pick up the slack and whatever. So I loved that, and I learned so much, and it gave me so much confidence. So I think that was a really good thing. And then whilst I was working for the ABCRA, I met the then owner of Camptrail Central. And so Brody and I actually left Tamworth. He was working on a place and I was working at the ABCRA, and we went and did another little job for a little while. And then when we went to Walker, because we were sort of an hour and a half from Tamworth, and at the time in Walker there wasn't really any job opportunities for myself and we didn't have children, so the owner of Camptrail Central was looking for somebody to be the face of their brand and run the business and work with all their secretaries and things. So yeah, I did that business from home for about 2 years. And then COVID hit, and obviously there was no events. So yeah, at the time I was pregnant with Clancy, so it wasn't too bad at the time. And then I went back and did a little bit of that from home when Clancy was a baby. Then I sort of got into my photography, I guess you'd say. But no, it was an amazing time. I really loved it, and yeah, I've learned a lot.
Yeah. And how massive was Camp Draft Central when it developed? I mean, it huge game changer for that Camp Draft community, wasn't it?
Yeah, huge. I can't remember. Clay had it for a little while at the time when I started working for him, a few years, and it was getting to this stage where he'd had a couple of part-time people, but yeah, I ran it full time, and yeah, it just grew and grew and grew when we were there. And yeah, we were doing massive events every weekend, and it was a really full-on job because lots of people had 9-to-5 jobs, so I'd be helping them early in the morning, and late at night, but very rewarding. And I guess because I was so passionate about the industry that I could resonate with them and yeah, really understand it at all. So yeah, just loved it. I mean, we were camp drafting at the time and Brody was rodeoing, so yeah, we were sort of somewhere every weekend as well, which was good.
Yeah, and you mentioned Brody, and how did you guys meet, and how did you guys both decide that ag was a space that you wanted to stay in and be a part of?
So it was quite funny. We were at the Long Yard pub in Tamworth, which, if you've been to Tamworth and you've been to the Classic or any event, that's sort of the place to go. And I remember we were there one night. I said to my girlfriend Tammy, I said, "Oh, geez, that guy over there is cute, isn't he?" And I said, "I'm going to go and talk to him." And I guess you'd say the rest is history, really. So I went and talked to him, and I was a few months after that. He was living down in Oberon at the time, working on a property. He'd sort of had enough of down there, and then he ended up moving up to Tamworth. And yeah, really, I guess ever since then, we've been inseparable. And he's actually a boilermaker by trade. He left school quite young at about 14 and did his trade. And then he's from a rodeo background and family. So he was rodeoing at the time and working on a place. So yeah, he went and worked on a few places. And then when we went to Walker, we found a property that we loved and a place to call home. And he was, I guess, sort of the 2IC at the time of that place. And now he's moved into this management role and he just is thriving and loves this. And we both do. I mean, I work on the property with him here and we run it together. And yeah, we just love the lifestyle that it gives us and our family. We ride, and our children, Clancy's, they've both got a pony, and Clancy's taken over one of my horses. So just the lifestyle and the freedom that it gives us. And luckily for us, our children don't have to go to daycare. They stay home here with us every day and come to work with us, and we run it all like that. So it's great. Very lucky.
It's the best daycare they can go to, I
Oh
think.
yeah, I know. Clancy can already run the race and sits up there and works the computer at the yards, and yeah, has a wow time. So yeah, it's pretty special.
And do you find living rurally there are challenges for you, Emma, or maybe some challenges that you see other people going through that you can identify, and what are they, and do you think there's an answer to them?
I don't feel like we have challenges here where we are at the moment. The community that we're in is just beautiful, and we've known a few people or known of a few people, and everyone has just welcomed us here in open arms. And anyone that we have known is like, oh, we must catch up for a coffee, and we've been out for dinner, lots of people, and even people that we didn't know, but our bosses have put us in touch with, have just welcomed us into their groups of friends and things. But certainly when I was in Walker, and I had both our children there, yeah, it was really tough at times. We had very long winters, and probably more so once I had Ruby, and Clancy was only sort of 22 months old when she was born. It was the middle of winter, and you couldn't just go outside and play because it was -5 with a top of 2 degrees for the day, or it was just freezing. It was cold from sort of March to November at times.
I've just got goosebumps thinking about that. My goodness.
Yeah, so I found, I've got plenty of girlfriends there and whatever, but personally, I found it really hard. We didn't have any family support, so my mum and dad were almost a couple of hours away, and Brody's family doesn't live near us. So yeah, it was really tough. Brody was gone all day every day from 7 in the morning or before till he wouldn't get home till 5:30. He didn't work on the property we lived on, so he had to go away, and I was lonely. So it was tough. I had some tough days. And even though you could get out of the house and it wasn't too far to go to town, but yeah, you were lonely, I guess you'd say. And to go to get groceries or just anything, and it was hard because you had two babies, so packing them up to go in the car to go and get groceries by yourself was tough with one screaming. And yeah, it was a juggle, but we got there.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
in your opinion, especially for women, how do you think that, I suppose, the loneliness and connection, how, in your opinion, do you think that gap could be bridged, or do you think it is being bridged? What can we do as community members to do better, I guess?
My mum always talks of sort of old-fashioned play groups and things like that. I know there was a travelling play group in Walker which went to different areas once a fortnight or something, but I'd love to see a bit more of those older style things come back in, where it doesn't matter who you are, but everyone's invited, and you take morning tea and your mum sit down and have a coffee, and it doesn't cost anything. It's not paying to go to daycare, and it's not an expense to anybody, but it's just the local hall. Or do you know what I mean? I guess I wish there was more things like that coming back into play, that don't cost an arm and a leg to go and do, and you don't need to get dressed up, and it's just the kids can go and play for a couple of hours, and mums can have a yarn, and everyone goes home. And yeah, so I guess that would be nice to see. And I have no doubt that they are in some communities, but not in every community. So that would be nice.
Yeah, I love that idea of no cost. Bring something, let the kids play, because it's that, even though it might be for an hour or 45 minutes until the kids have a meltdown, it's that connection and meeting new people. I think it's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it's hard because everyone's busy, but I had a few girlfriends, and we'd often just meet at the park, and one of us would get coffee, and we'd all go there. And everyone's got such busy lives nowadays that it's hard, but I think it's making the time to do things like that and enjoying those little things in life. That I only said the other day to a girlfriend, actually, isn't it interesting now? Because I feel like when I was a child, mums didn't go to work necessarily. You had that time off, and you stayed at home, and you had your children and things. Whereas now, when mums are pregnant, it's like, have you got your baby booked into daycare because I'm going back to work at 6? Do you know what I mean? And life's different now. And I get that because life's expensive, but I guess I'm trying to really cherish this time with our babies. And yeah, I do go away for small stints at a time photographing and things, but yeah, majority of the time I'm home with the children, and we're working, but we're doing things as a family, which is lucky.
That's a great segue into my next question for you, Emma. So you've picked up a camera and you do photography. You're a busy woman. You said you've just been down at Nutrien doing some stuff there. So where did this passion for photography come from? Is it something you've always enjoyed doing? And where did you teach yourself? And what kind of photography are you into?
Yeah, so I picked up a camera when I was maybe 6 months pregnant with Clancy. When I was working for the ABCRA, I met the amazing Stephen Mowbray, who's a very well-known equine photographer. I remember racking his brains. We were sitting down one day doing some marketing stuff, and I was like, how do you do this? And show me what you do. And Stephen got me a camera and a lens, and he's like, that'll do, get that. I'll come up for the weekend. He's from Sydney. So he came up to us in Walker, And he spent a weekend with me and showed me how to drive this thing. And I had no idea what I was doing. But anyway, he's like, you just have to use it. You just have to keep playing with it. Showed me the basics of an editing program. And from there, I guess, yeah, I used it a lot. I was terrible, probably, but loved it, had a passion for it. Then I had Clancy and kept playing with it. And then it was the end of that year, Joe Theme, who I'm very dear friends with now, got in touch with me to sort of be her assistant at the Classic in Tamworth, the Nutrien Classic. Would I go down there and help her? And I was like, oh, I've got this little baby, he's 6 months old, but really wanted to do it because I was really interested and passionate about it. So I went and did the Classic for the first time with this little 6 month-old baby. From there, I guess I did a lot of small camp drafts, and if we were going to a camp draft, I'd take my camera. And I guess I found a real passion for capturing like candid moments. Not necessarily like I took a lot of camp draft photos, but I just love and still do adore to take sort of behind the scenes, people not knowing you're taking a picture of them. And so it's a real passion of mine. And some people say I have a bit of a gift of the gab for it. But I remember when Stephen was teaching me, and I was only chatting to him earlier this week. And I said, do you remember showing me how to work this thing? And you said to me, I can teach you how to use the camera, but I can't show you how to see things through the lens. And he's like, oh, that just gave me goosebumps because it's so true. I've helped quite a few younger girls get started and whatever, and I would help anybody. But yeah, you can teach someone how to drive these amazing cameras, but you can't teach someone how to see or what to see and how you see something. So I guess that's for me something that's always stuck in my mind. And I always think photography is such an art. I just adore people's abstract way of seeing things or whatever. So, yeah, a lot of camp drafts, a lot of equine events. I do quite a lot of rural families now, which I love doing. Love just going to someone's place and them being in their everyday clothes and just capturing their children and them doing their thing. Yeah, so I quite often take the camera with us when we're mustering or doing something and take a few photos, but I guess it depends how burnout I feel and how big of a time I've had on the camera doing other things to whether I take it with me or not. But yeah, so it's pretty fun. I do really love it.
It's such a great tool and business to also create when you live remotely, which is what you guys do. So yeah, and you do put some beautiful photos up, and I look forward to following that journey along and whatever that might bring. So where you're living now, you're working on it, is it organic beef property? So has that been a big learning curve for you both?
Yeah, it has. Coming from a non-organic property to the organic property, not hugely different, but as you can imagine, yeah, we don't use any chemicals or anything like that on the property or on the cattle, which we love because, I quite like the fact that our children aren't growing up with chemicals all around them or, airplanes dispensing chemical and things. So I do really love that aspect. And yeah, it has been a learning curve and an amazing learning curve because to see that the cattle don't need to be drenched all the time and things. And, our cattle here are fat and healthy and we really love it. And it's an amazing family that we work for. And all their properties are organic. So yeah, it's great.
We're getting into the back end of the interview now, Em, but I would love to know, in your experience of all the wonderful things, the ebbs and flows that you have been through yourself, what's some advice that you think every woman should hear, whether they're in their early 20s or maybe they're in their 30s or maybe they've just become new mums? What's some advice that you really live by?
I think just staying true and authentic to yourself. And I have a couple of really dear girlfriends that I am very close to. And I always remember my mum saying to me when I was, a teenager and growing up that, when you're older, if you're lucky to have five good friends, you should think yourself very fortunate. And I guess that's the age and stage that I'm at now. And I feel very fortunate to have a couple of mums that have children very similar ages. Shh, stop, Clance. To what we have. So we bounce off each other quite a lot and compare stories, I guess, whether they're good or bad. And just trying to find a support network and being older now, yeah, and just maturing and knowing that you don't need to have 50 gazillion friends. I guess that was such a big thing for me growing up. You felt like you had to be popular and having this huge abundance, being loved by everyone. And I guess just realizing that staying true to you and yeah, finding some beautiful friends that are like-minded and have the same qualities as you do, because that's important, and for them to love you for who you are and not feeling, sadly, I don't have some of the girlfriends I had when, for instance, Brody and I got together. Or they're still friends, but they're more of acquaintances now, because I guess life changes, and yeah, I've just learned that it's okay for friends to come and go, or family, or whatever it may be. And I think that's really important as well, that it doesn't matter whether they're friends or family, if they're not healthy for your mindset and they're not healthy for you, then you don't need them in your circle if they're not uplifting you and they're not making you feel like a good person. And do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's really important, and it's something that I've stuck to my guns lately, mainly since we've had our children and things. And you just think, you know what, I don't really need you in my life if you can't make you feel like a good person. So I think that's probably one of the things of my anxiety or my recovery as such. Yeah, just knowing who's good for your soul and who's not. And, not that they're bad people, they're not, but they might just not make you feel like the best version of yourself. So.
I know where everyone's caught up in the whole Taylor Swift thing at the moment, but I was actually, she put a really good quote out a few weeks ago, and it was about friendship and life. And it was like, you can only carry so much in your life, and you should be only able to carry the things that make you feel lighter, because then you can carry more. And I thought that was really good. And I think that applies to friendship as well. You need to have those friends that make you feel lighter and go through life, and it's an easy process. So, yeah, some great advice there, Em, from you. Last question, social media. Are you on it? Where can people find you? And do you have any recommendations of some other social media accounts or podcasts or books that you could recommend?
I'm not much of a reader, to my mother's disgust. I don't read a lot of books. I do love social media, and I try and love it for the right reasons. So I love to follow things that are real and raw and, resonate to me. I love following other photographers and things. So I love Pip Williams. She's an amazing photographer. And I follow a few American photographers, rodeo photographers like Matt Cohen. He does some amazing different aspects of rodeo stuff, and I just think he's so amazingly talented. I met an amazing lady last weekend when I was doing a wedding, actually, and she's from Armidale. She's a mum too, and she's called the iPhone Bridesmaid. And she goes to people's weddings, and she's a videographer, but she has it all on her iPhone. And she's made this little business, and she is just kicking gold, and she's just gorgeous. Anyway, and I just think that's so fun. And I love following a few different gardening pages. Yeah, I love my garden. So I'm more of probably an Instagrammer than a Facebooker. Penwood Creations is my page on Instagram and Facebook, where you can find my photography work. And I'm a little bit slack at posting on there because usually I'm chasing kids around, but I try to. I'll have a big stint and I'll post heaps of stuff, and then I'm dormant for a few weeks. But
That's
yeah,
very much lot mum life, isn't it?
oh, isn't it ever? You're like, yes, I'm going to schedule all this stuff and I'm going to be so organized. And then, yeah, someone comes in and needs something. So that's on the back burner. And I put in quite a lot of early mornings. I try and do my work before the children wake up in the morning so that I'm not working while they're awake, or, during nap time, I'm back on the laptop working and at night time. So, yeah, just that sort of juggle. But yeah, so.
Thank you. And I'll make sure I pop those ones that you've mentioned in the show notes for people to check out, and definitely go across and check out your page. It's beautiful. Emma, that's it. That's our interview. And what a fantastic story and some wonderful knowledge there that you've shared. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast and sharing your Married to the Land journey. I wish you and Brody all the best with the kids. I know you guys are out to go and do a killer this morning. Is that
Yeah,
right?
yes, yeah, we're off to
If that
that's
doesn't throw you
charming.
back into reality, nothing will.
I know, charming, charming job, but one of those things that, yeah, the freezer's quite low, so someone's got to go.
That's it. Thank you again, Emma. Really appreciate your time on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the podcast. If you're looking to advertise or partner with Married to the Land, then I suggest you send me an email or head to the website marriedtotheland.com.au. I would love it if you could leave a review, like, or share this podcast amongst friends or family. It only takes a few moments and it makes podcasts like this more discoverable for other people.